Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, and today we have a very special guest.
It was a neurologist who in 1986 first told me I had an inoperable, fast-growing, life-threatening brain tumor and only had 6 months to a year to live. While I was in the hospital for the next 2 days, no one even talked to me about the elephant in the room, which only increased my fears. Later, 4 other neurologists told me the exact same thing, that I'd be dead within a year. I decided they were all being narrow-minded. I'd already learned that everything was made of energy, including me, and that love is the most powerful form there is. I'd felt that surge of energy when we fall in love, or when someone is attentive to our needs. So I chose love to heal me, and it worked.
Okay, now that you have all seen that video, I am going to introduce Sandy Gold. She's an artist. An author of the book.
I'd felt that surge of energy when we fall in love, or when someone is attentive to our needs. So I chose love to heal me, and it worked.
Okay, now that you have all seen that video, I am going to introduce Sandy Gold. She's an artist, an author of the book.
I'd felt that surge of energy when we fall in love. Or when someone is attentive to our needs.
Right? You had a boyfriend, you had, I'm assuming, a job, and you get this diagnosis, and 5 neurologists tell you, that's it, it's over.
Within 6 months to a year, I'd be dead. And I was 33, by the way. Not that it matters, but...
Well, it does, 33. Oh my God, okay. Mm-hmm. So, but you decided that they weren't really listening to you. And you just weren't going to buy it. Like, that took something. What had you say that to yourself, I guess I would say, do you think?
What really helped was that my neurologist at my very first appointment that I had with him was accusing me of not telling him all my symptoms because it was impossible, he kept saying, to have as few symptoms as I had. I mean, he was really getting aggravated and I thought rather rude. He turned to my then boyfriend and asked if I was telling the truth, which just really. So I realized that he wasn't listening. He wasn't trying to listen. And I went and saw 4 other neurologists after that that told me the exact same thing. I had 6 months to a year to live. And I decided they were all being too narrow-minded. That they just weren't looking at the big picture because they weren't even trying to get to know me as a person. And we're all individuals. I was just being seen as another number.
Wow. So how did you get the name of the people in Boston? From one of those guys?
Oh, that's an interesting story. I was in a teaching hospital the very next day. I was sent there to get tested after test after test after test. And I'd finally fallen asleep after having an angiogram. And this neurosurgeon walked in leading a group of medical students and woke me up. And I was rather irritated and I didn't greet them rather warmly. And I was excited once I realized they were going to be talking about my brain tumor because nobody in the hospital had ever even discussed it with me. So I thought, well, maybe I'm going to learn something. But then the doctor reached for my chart and the blood drained from his head, face. And he immediately said to the students, I'll meet you in the other room, while they all quickly tried to leave my room. And just as he had his hand on the doorknob, I yelled, hey, my doctor says I'm going to die. Do you have any ideas for me? And he slowly turned around and he said that the MRI had recently been invented, and perhaps in a year from now, they'll have something that will save me. And I got excited because that was the first I heard a year from now. And I said to him, do you really think I'm going to be alive a year from now? And he said, no, I'm really sorry. But he did know somebody that was doing something in Boston. And he didn't know the doctor's name, but he knew another doctor's name. So it was kind of a convoluted way of finding him. But I'm so grateful that I did.
So when he had those people leave, was it because he saw the diagnosis and he didn't want them?
There was nothing to teach the students. I was a goner.
Wow. So, okay. So miraculously, there he was. He gives you the name in Boston and you say, of course, you're going to follow up because you had no other choice, right?
So that was on a Friday. So the following morning, I called the doctor's name, the doctor that whose name he did know. And I told the woman, she's told me that he wasn't taking calls or he wasn't in. And I told the woman, listen, this is a life and death situation and it's my life. I don't mean to be a pain in the butt, but I'm going to have to keep calling you again and again and again and again until I get through to this doctor. And she laughed and said, wait a minute, I'll get in touch with him. So she did. And he agreed to see my pictures so I could send my pictures to this doctor. And he said, oh, and before that, she had said, and don't make sure you don't call tomorrow because he's flying to Washington, D.C. And I said, great. What flight is he on? I'll pick him up. And that's when she laughed and went and got in contact with him. And so I had an appointment with him, who in turn got me an appointment as long as I was in Boston with Dr. Chilberg, who agreed to see me that very day, which was so sweet.
Which day? Oh, the day that you went up to Boston. Wow.
Right, to see the first doctor, yes. So I went in and to see Dr. Chilberg, and he explained the procedure to me as if it was the very first time he'd ever explained it to anybody. He was acting like a little kid that he knew he had something that I wanted, and he knew that I knew, and so we just sat there grinning at each other the entire time.
But, and he said, you know, you might lose this or you might lose that, but who cares? Otherwise you'd be dead. So, right.
Well, at that point, he didn't know whether or not he could take me on as his patient yet. He had to do some studies, and it wasn't until 2 weeks after that he agreed to take me.
Oh.
Only at that point, I have been told it was a hemangioblastoma, which is a fast growing tumor. But I also had the tumor in the worst part of my brain, the pons, because we use 100% of our brain. We only use 10% of our brain. We use 100% of the pons. So whatever you have in the pons, it's going to be affecting something badly. So it hides. They couldn't really tell what it was. So he said, either you have a hemangioblastoma or you have an AVM. And 3 out of 5 on my cancer board think it's an AVM. And I said, great, I don't have a brain tumor. He goes, well, the problem with AVMs is they bleed when you're in your 30s. And since you're 33, you know, yours could bleed at any time. And since it's in the pons, you'd be dead in 5 seconds.
And what does AVM mean?
Arterial venous malformation. It's basically just a bunch of arteries that are all entangled, and they weaken when they're in your 30s and they bleed. I believe his name was Johnson, the senator. I wrote about it in my book, and I can't recall his name, but I believe it's Senator Johnson, who had one bleed back in the 90s, and it was on National Public Radio, and, you know, he was rushed to the hospital.
So was it not actually a tumor? It was this AVM thing, or no?
They don't know, because of the way you can't read the pons. So they couldn't then. It was either one or the other. And he said, you call it whatever you're most comfortable with. And I was most comfortable calling it a brain tumor because I didn't like the idea of it bleeding and it being dead in 5 seconds.
I don't know why, but okay. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So there you went. So he did the treatment. He did the, right? You went back.
Proton beam. At that point, it was called proton beam radiation. Today, it's called proton beam therapy. And he was the only doctor in the world doing it. He had pioneered the use of the cyclotron machine that was discovered during World War II for defense purposes. He pioneered the use, and he was for medical purposes, and he was saving 7 people every Tuesday from around the world. He was amazing, this man. He was amazing.
Wow. So it's really miraculous, I will say, that you, that one guy knew that guy who knew that guy, right?
I've only met one other doctor, and that was just in the last couple of years. No, I guess about 10 years ago, that even knew of that doctor. Nobody else had ever heard of him. Wow. None of my neurologists, nobody.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that was meant to be, right? So,
absolutely.
Okay.
I was meant to be awakened in that hospital by that doctor.
Yeah, right. Wow. Okay, so they did the thing. Well, I can't remember the name, but they did that.
They beamed me.
Right. And then you had 2 years where you could bleed out at any second and you didn't know if it worked, right? But at least you were going to be alive, right?
The treatment itself could cause it to bleed. So I could have died from the treatment as well. So I really didn't know. I really wasn't safe. But I was, and it worked.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot.
But instead of the 6 months, it was sort of extended. I mean, it wasn't because you could have died, but you didn't have the 6 month deadline anymore, right?
Well, I passed it, but I could have died within those 6 months. Right. I could have died.
Right. But at least you had a hope.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Like before that, you were just a goner. Then you at least, I'm sure it wasn't fun, but at least you could get past it now. You had a chance.
Right. Dying never felt right to me. I never really thought I was going to die, but I didn't like what felt like a time bomb in my head. That was very difficult. Yeah. And to know that I had volunteered to have a treatment that actually could ignite it was scary. However, I really learned to be aware of my thoughts and what I said at that point, because I didn't want my last words to be something horrible.
Yeah.
And be angry at somebody. Mm-hmm.
So when did you have choose the love? Like, when did you, I remember there was a scene in the book with your cat when you experienced love. Was that the first time that came over you?
That was just, I was diagnosed in December, and that was in January that took place. And what you're speaking about is, just so people understand, is I was looking back at all the paintings I had painted in the last year, and I had painted dead carnations. I had actually drawn a woman hanging on to a grave. I had painted a painting of a fish hanging upside down by a fishing line. And I'd painted my grandmother, a portrait of my grandmother who had died of a brain tumor. And it suddenly dawned on me. I had never seen it before, that death was a theme in all of them. And I don't think I've ever been more frightened in my life when that realization struck me. But what I did, just like, what's the name of the cartoon character that runs off the cliff and all of a sudden he realizes he's off the cliff and he does this?
Yeah.
Coyote guy. I did that in with my head because I was really freaking out. I mean, it was dangerously freaking out. And I quickly realized that would I rather follow the advice of doctors who keep telling me I'm going to die, or whatever it is, this spiritual being, this God, this higher power that's speaking to me through my artwork and overlooking me, you know, taking care of me in that way, is how it felt. I felt an intense amount of love at that moment, that God was speaking to me through my art. I mean, that was just incredible to me. And I wanted to be able to get as close to God as I possibly could. I wanted to attach myself to his ankles, as you can imagine. And the only way I knew how to do that was by keeping my heart open and letting love guide me.
Wow. Okay. So what I'm not getting is, wait, I just have to write that down. Okay. Keeping heart open. Okay. Letting love guide. I think that's amazing. But okay. So when you were doing these paintings of death, was the thing that you saw that you were focused on death and that's why death was there?
No. Okay. No. I had no idea. That's why that moment was so scary to me. I just chose to do a painting of my grandmother. I mean, I just chose to do, actually, ironically, the drawing that I did of the woman holding onto the grave, I had made arrangements with one of my teachers to share a model. And she set it up. I didn't even set that up.
Oh, okay. What about the fish?
I had seen another painting that an artist had done that was so beautiful, of a fish hanging upside down by its tail. I mean, who would ever think that it could be so beautiful? Wow. So I decided I wanted to try that.
So you weren't doing death. You just happened to see, oh my God, the theme is death. Okay. So when you saw that, what went on in your mind? Just so, because I don't get the transition from that to opening your heart to love.
Because I immediately felt panic. I mean, I thought, oh my God, I really am going to die. However, I was enveloped by this incredible amount of love once I realized that God is looking out for me. God is talking to me as an individual, is reaching out to me, you know, of all the people on the planet, is how I felt. And I just felt so privileged, and I've never felt more loved.
Because
and
that's of that feeling. It wasn't about the dead stuff. It was about what you experienced with the love.
Right. The death was a doctor's thing. Okay. The love was all of a sudden I've been thrown this lifeline. And that's how it felt. And I didn't even tell anybody that story because this was my, I felt that this was tethered to my hope, to how I was going to save my life. Wow. I wasn't going to share that with anybody and take that chance of somebody making fun of it or rolling their eyes.
Wow. Okay. Mm. So that was before you had the machine.
Treatment. Right.
Yeah. The treatment. Then you had the treatment. Mm-hmm. You're there with Gary, who's not so supportive. And how did you end up in Westerly with the mural? How did you move from, you left DC to go back to Rhode Island? Because
it took me 2 years for the treatment to work. And during that time, my relationship with Gary was deteriorating. And within days after I received the letter saying it was a success, and I thought we were going to celebrate, he broke up with me. And so that's when I decided to move back to where I grew up. I grew up in Connecticut and I moved back. I moved to Rhode Island, which is right on the border.
Right. Okay. All right. So you're back in Westerly and you find out it's a success. And then somehow you're on 2020. No, I know. Then you got the mural. So there was the guy, I'm trying to remember from the book. There was the guy looking at your stuff. I know it was all laid out.
Oh, yes.
Before.
Yes.
He said, what happened there? And then he saw after, right? Is that how it went?
That was amazing. I set up a studio in downtown Westerly, and the curator of a brand new gallery across the street from my studio was looking for people that he wanted to show, and he wanted to have somebody that would draw in a lot of people. And people kept telling him, well, get Sandy Gold. You know, she'll get Sandy Gold. So he came, but I was so nervous. He came over and I put my work in chronological order, which I've never done before and never done since. But I was so insecure that I wanted him to see that I'm growing as an artist. This isn't just it. I have more. So he came over and he did. He pointed to my artwork and he said, "What happened here?" And it just blew my mind because he pointed to where I had gotten a brain tumor. My artwork had changed. And as he put, it was like you were painting from the inside out. There was an intimate quality to it. Again, it was just amazing. I hadn't even planned on telling anybody about the brain tumor. I mean, I wasn't talking about it for 2 years. I mean, I tell a few people, but I didn't want to go public with it. You know, I wanted to leave that in Washington, D.C.
Wow. So then was he the guy that asked you to do the mural?
Right. Right. Then he came up. We got talking about life and death and art. I mean, it was a wonderful conversation. And he just said, in right then and there, you know, yes, would you paint this mural? And I said, only if I can erase it.
Wow. Okay. So then, so where exactly did you put the mural? Was it in the gallery?
It was in the, it's a huge, gorgeous gallery. I painted it on a wall that was 63 feet long by 12. I think it was 12 feet high, 12 or 15, perhaps.
Wow. Mm-hmm. How did you, I guess you had a ladder.
I did. I had a scaffolding.
That's 2 6-foot people, so that's pretty high.
Ironically, I originally wanted to do all four walls and the ceiling, but that's how I think. You know, I had to be reeled in.
Yeah. And how long did it take you to do it?
I painted it in September, October, November, 3 months.
Yeah.
And then it was on display for 1 month. And during those 3 months, I mean, I was just painting a painting or a mural in a small town, 20,000 people. In a library, in the smallest state in the union, and everything just blew up. I was literally the headline of my local newspaper 3 times.
While you were painting?
While I was painting this. Oh. People just got very excited about it. And the Associated Press picked up the story and sent it across the country 3 times. People Magazine, New York Times, Boston Globe, Washington Post. I mean, you name, and all the tiny little newspapers, you know, in every little town. My brother was in Africa at the time, and he went to the American Embassy, and he was reading about me in People Magazine in Africa.
And were you on the cover?
No, no.
But there was an article. And what was so... Was it because of the tumor, or they didn't know about the tumor? Was it because you, like, yeah. What was it that got their attention, do you think?
I think the fact that I was painting love, you know, I was painting what I'd learned from somebody that almost lost their life. I think people were curious about what's that about. And when they walked in, the majority of people just felt love. And so many people would just cry in front of the mural. They said it was like a love letter to God. There's a woman quoted, a 2020 TV show came and filmed it. And that's what a woman said, you know, during that filming of that, that it felt like a thank you note to God.
So they were, because I watched that, and we will put the link of, it's an incredible piece. We will put the link of that in the notes. They were filming while you were painting and after you were painting, right? I mean.
Actually, they filmed me erasing it.
Too, but were they there before you had finished it as well? Or did someone else take that stuff? Because.
What you're thinking of, I was painting, I was doing a pastel painting in my studio.
Okay. So they came after. Now you said you had 10,000, am I getting the numbers wrong? Probably 10,000 people come and see it.
Which is unheard of. Yes.
Wow.
And yeah, then I had a couple come from, I believe it was North Carolina, that drove up. And they arrived 15 minutes before the library was closing. And Webster, the curator, offered to keep it open for them, but they said no. You know, we're just so, we, we're just so happy to be able to stand in front of it for 15 minutes and feel the love that this artist poured into it. I mean, they were practically dancing around the studio, and then they turned around and drove back.
And was that the snowstorm? Were they the ones that came in a snowstorm, or was it something else?
That was somebody else.
So, okay, I'm getting the stories mixed up. So, okay, so then even with all this love, and you had said 30 days, like I was going, when I was watching, I was like, maybe she won't erase it. Maybe she won't erase it. But obviously you did, because that was what you said. But that's what you just felt was right. All that work for 3 months, you and tell us why again.
I wanted people to understand and appreciate their lives. And I needed to paint something that they would appreciate and want me not to erase, so that they understand that just because our lives end or are shortened, it doesn't mean our lives are worth any less than. As long as we appreciate our lives while we have it, that's the important thing.
Wow. You know, when you were saying, when I was reading about that in the book, the appreciation, like, you know, I've been taught, because I tend to be negative sometimes, you know, gratitude will it's a higher vibration, but appreciation is also. And so I've added that into my repertoire because I can appreciate as well as be grateful for. Mm-hmm. And it sort of adds a little more meat to the gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I know everything switches when you turn to that, right? I can feel it, right? Can't you feel it now? It's like,
yes,
something shifts when you go to appreciation. Yeah. Wow.
And you're doing exactly what I did, what I used to navigate through the medical field, was to feel what strengthened my body and what weakened it.
Hmm.
And Jess, when you were talking about it, your shoulders went up, your whole body, you know, you were strengthening yourself.
Yeah.
We all can see that.
Wow. And
that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I know, so we're not going to get into your mother so much, but just that there was supposed to be a follow-up. How long after that, 2020, that they wanted to do a follow-up?
Oh,
was that 3 years later?
No, it was about a year later, I believe. It wasn't that long afterwards, but I had gotten radiation damage. And I was sicker than I'd ever felt in my life. I was sicker. I mean, it was horrible. That lasted up until probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. The radiation damage just kept coming in different ways. The worst being horrible, horrible migraine headaches that a doctor said I would not call these migraine headaches. They're far worse, and they're from the brain tumor, radiation damage. And I got breast cancer.
From the... Oh, okay. So... Now, I've been saying that you had 3 times they were telling you you wouldn't make it. Was the radiation damage supposed to kill you too, or did I make that up?
No.
That was
because two doctors told me I had to get a mastectomy and I refused. A doctor called me when I called to cancel an appointment. A doctor got on the telephone and said, "You're messing with fire. You know, your life is not threatened now, but if you don't get this mastectomy, it certainly will be." Well, that was almost 12 years ago, and I never got them expect me. I declined.
Right. So, okay. So you had, I know, did you leave your art? Could you not do your art during that time, or could you still paint?
Well, the brain tumor, the radiation damage affected the left side of my body. As you can tell, I have a crooked smile now.
Oh.
And I couldn't paint for 7 years. And during that time, I did teach myself to paint with my right hand, and I still won awards, so you couldn't tell the difference. But for me, it wasn't the same. I mean, I still love painting, but I got my need to be creative out by doing this, writing this book, and I couldn't do both. I just didn't have time to do both. Otherwise, this book would never have come out.
Wow.
So okay. I had to put all my focus into it. But I'm looking forward to painting again. And I did paint the cover on my book.
Okay. I have not seen the cover because I just saw the page. Oh, yes. Hold that up. Hold that up. Okay. So let's read it. I chose love. Can you read it?
How to thrive after a life-threatening illness using love to guide you.
Wow.
And you know that wonderful feeling that so many people, as soon as they get to the beach, they just run down and put their feet in the water? It's like, that's what I painted, that feeling. Because it's that, as I spoke of before, it's that feeling, that yummy feeling that I kept gravitating towards that helped strengthen my body and, I believe, saved my life.
Wow. So the radiation damage wasn't going to kill you. It just made you feel like, basically,
it made living difficult.
Yes, made living horrible and painful. And then when you, like 7 years ago, and we're going to go to the commercial in a second, but the migraines ended when you got that blanket from your friend, right?
Yes, which sounds ridiculous. No. I know it sounds ridiculous.
It was like magnets or something? Was it?
No, it's actually, you know how when astronauts, oftentimes their bones become compromised after being up in the air? Well, they studied certain astronauts whose bones were not being compromised, and they realized it's because they stayed in their spacesuits longer, and the lining of the spacesuits is what these blankets are made out of.
Wow. But so... Yeah. So the using that blanket or having it on you cured your migraines. Did it
immediately within minutes of being miserable for decades and at times really wanting to die? The pain was so great. And just so that people know, it's called a Solaris blanket. Solar being the sun. I do charge my blanket every 2 weeks outside, so it picks up the sun's energy. And the way it works is it reflects my energy back to me when I wrap myself in it.
And you do it every night?
Actually, I sleep with it now, so I don't have to. So I just sleep with it. Yeah.
So do you think it could help other people who suffer?
Oh, I definitely think. Although I have had two other people try it who were heavily medicated, and I think that's the reason it didn't work. Whereas I was on no medication, and I think that helps because it does need your body's strength, whereas medications kind of work for other ways.
Wow. All right. So we're going to go to our commercial break, and then we're going to come back and hear more about how you chose love. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk.
and set up a conversation.
Okay, welcome back to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And as always, thank you to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social emotional learning to your schools, businesses, or teams, definitely get in contact with them. And it will connect you in a way that you wished you had tried it long before. And then if there's areas in your life where you're just not happy or you feel stuck and don't think you can talk about it, contact me, Hillary@gettingrealwithhillary.com, and let's have a conversation, because I was there and I have a process that will get you free and creating a life you love. And now we're going to bring back Sandy Gold, our miracle woman. All right. So you were miserable for those 20 years, and I know you had problems, you know, with your family, and that might have caused some stress for you. Do you think now? So the blanket cured all that migraine stuff and that feeling terrible, right? Do you think if you didn't have the stress with your family, that might have gone sooner? I mean, I know you can't look back, but there was something you had said that your body protected you from your family.
Well, interesting that a side effect from the brain tumor was a temper. But the only people I got, I mean, I didn't yell at people on the street. The only people I yelled at was Gary, my boyfriend, and my mother, who just kept pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. And years later, a doctor said to me, you know, it's a good thing you got a temper from the brain tumor, because it was protecting you. It was pushing those two people away, which I thought was very interesting. And yes, I do believe, although there's no proof, and it's not a blame thing, but migraines, stress does make migraines far worse and may even create them. I don't know. But I would suggest people find ways of managing their stress that have migraines.
Yeah. Now, you know, reading the book, of course, we're looking at it. We're not living it like you were. But it seemed like you kept expecting your mother and your siblings to be compassionate to you, which who wouldn't? You have a death sentence, you know, you're feeling miserable. And obviously they never were able to. But I think, you know, for me, expecting someone to be different was just disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. I finally realized, I'm talking about my ex-husband. So that I was no longer going to wait for him to change. He didn't need to change. Why should he have to change? But I wasn't going to do that anymore. And that's when I got divorced. It seemed like, and these were siblings, obviously you can't get divorced from your siblings, but it seemed like for so many years you were waiting for them to be different. And especially when your mother died and you were expecting this compassion, and finally you saw, okay, that's their limitation. They were never trained or had a role model for emotions. And so you finally could accept them as they were and use love. And it seems like you finally got to peace, right?
I realized that the most harmful thing I was doing to myself was expecting them to change.
Yeah.
You know, because I loved them. And I never thought, I never saw them as not loving me and not being there for me when I have a life-threatening problem. Actually, what made me recognize the problem was that when I got the brain tumor, they were silent. They just kind of distanced themselves. But it was when I got radiation damage 7 years later and I needed my family's help when all hell broke loose. That's when they got very angry and were very critical. because I needed them. And that put pressure on them. And I think that pulled their covers off.
Oh.
You know, they didn't want to see that the problem was them. I mean, none of us do, really. But it's so helpful when we're able to look at ourselves rather than blaming others. Now, that's why I said earlier, I don't want to blame, because that takes our power away. We really need to be able to look at ourselves in order to be able to grow.
Right. Wow. I mean, it's amazing, you know, your strength of not only the, you know, having to go through the, you know, the death sentence, the radiation damage for how many years, 20, 30 years, feeling miserable, and your siblings not being able to give you what you wanted and needed, you know, but here you are, you know, can I say your age?
Seventy
years old, still alive, still gorgeous, still filled with love. And it's like, you know, do you ever think that this was your, you know, when they say you're a soul and a human, like this was your path that you, as unpleasant as it was, that like your message is this choosing love, and it's so powerful for the world to hear? Like, do you ever think that way, that this is what you had to go through to, I don't know.
Yes, yes, definitely. I mean, as a kid, I wanted to be as loving person as I possibly could be. I mean, I was going for sainthood, you know, as a kid.
I think you got it. So,
and
I don't know if saints get a crown, but I'll give you the saint crown right now. You're a saint. Yes.
I think we either are given or we attract obstacles in our life to help us reach our goals.
Mm. Wow.
That's how I look at it. And it was when my two siblings were both screaming at me while my mother was dying. I mean, literally screaming at me, that made me finally realize that they don't even know. I mean, I had worked for hospice before. I've been around dying people a lot. But they didn't even know that you don't scream at somebody whose mother is dying. You know, that didn't even comprehend. You know,
right.
That's how frightened these people, these two, my two siblings are. You know, they're how protective they are. You know, they couldn't even grasp that, which is just sad, sad.
Wow. Well, it's amazing. You know, as you said, you came from the same womb, and yet here you are, you know, embracing love. And then you found that other technique. Was it the KI where you could actually go in and let out the pain, like finally, instead of, I know you, because I'm similar in that we want to please, and if people got mad at me, I would think I wasn't careful enough. Right. You know, I never blamed them for yelling. It was like, uh-oh, I should have been more careful. And like, I don't know what woke me up, like, you know, like maybe you're attracting this so you can learn a freaking lesson, like stop doing, you know, but it was just normal. It's just the way I was. I, you know, so I don't know if that's what yours was, but then how did you finally, because I think there's a lot of people pleasers. Obviously people stay with abusive people, you know, you'd think we'd know better, but obviously we don't. Like, how did you finally break that people pleasing, trying to keep everyone else happy and taking care of yourself?
What comes to mind first, I'm sure there's many steps to that, but what comes to mind is when I had the temper from the brain tumor, I felt so horrible whenever I lashed out. I mean, horrible. I mean, I really thought I was the scum of the earth. I mean, it felt awful. I've never felt so horrible. But then other people were yelling at me, i.e. my mother or my boyfriend, and they never even apologized. And I felt also guilty when they're yelling at me.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And it really took until I was 40-something years old, and 50% of that stress lifted when I realized I can't change people. I can't make people act the way they do. I don't have that power. Right. So they're responsible for them yelling. I'm responsible for when I yell. And I always, always did apologize. I think apology is a huge thing, and it's something I wasn't taught to do. Nobody in my family apologizes, and so many people don't. They think it's a weakness, and yet it cleans the slate. it feels like a cleanse to me. When I get to apologize, I like it. And I love it when people accept my apology.
So when you stopped thinking you could change people, and I'm assuming that your energy shifted, that you now, like when you had the friend with the fleas and you didn't get mad at her. I mean, I hated reading that part, but and your friend's like, aren't you mad? Whatever. And you weren't. Did you, when your energy shifted, and I don't know when it did, but obviously at some point you stopped feeling bad and trying to change them. Did you start attracting a higher vibration person, like more loving and supportive, that didn't yell at you?
Yes, my life is so different. And when I look back, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, what I thought was normal, what I thought was love, what I thought was life, it's so different today.
Wow. And was it that technique, was it the KI?
It's not any one thing. It's a process.
Okay.
You know, I really do believe that we teach people how to be with us. You know, I would not tolerate anybody yelling at me today. You know, I would just say, just as I did with my brother, I put my hand up like a stop, like a policeman, and say, I'm sorry, I can't allow you to speak to me like that, and exit the room.
Wow. Wow.
You know, I wish I'd thought of that years ago. But yeah. I didn't have the confidence in myself. You know, I tolerated my brother yelling.
My and mother did yelling. That end things with him, or do you still have a relationship?
No. But it wasn't that. Although I'm sure they don't like the change in me. I mean, I'm sure they didn't like seeing that I was the only person not yelling and screaming while my mother was dying. You know, they were yelling and screaming at me, and I never did. I never yelled back at them. I was very loving to them the entire time, regardless how they treated me. Because again, I'm responsible for me. Mm. And I feel better when I'm loving towards people, regardless how they treat me.
Mm. Wow. So, yeah. So you've had so many, different, like you were working in hospice, you did these other techniques, and through it, I know you said, so you felt terrible until what, 7 years ago? How did you survive financially?
That's the big $1 million question. It's difficult enough to support oneself with a degree in fine arts and as an artist. It was very difficult, particularly towards the end. I was getting migraines 2 and 3 times a week. And just because they ended, I mean, they left my body just totally weakened. And I mean, it was horrible. It was horrible. How did I support myself? By just cutting back on expenses.
Wow. But somehow you made it. And then when the migraines, and then you were writing this book, so you stopped mm-hmm. the art, and now, do you feel better? I mean, like 0 to 100 when you got the blanket, like, are you still, have residue, or do you feel?
No comparison. No, I've never felt better in my life. No comparison.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so what are you doing now? You got the book. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, as far as exercise, I do yoga 3 times a week, and I row on a rowing machine and work out in different places at the YMCA in different wow. machines.
Isn't that amazing? Just from the blank. I mean, one of those serendipitous moments that she said, "Oh, try this," right? And it changed your life once
again. And I was not very nice to her when she said, "Try this," because I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I said, "Listen, so many people have tried, you know, various things. I have tried so many things. I said, I'm sorry. I just want to go home and put my own blanket up over my head." And that's when she gave me the key to her house, which was so loving. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah. She says,
stop by anytime and just wrap yourself in my blanket. And I was driving by her house and I started to get a migraine. And I thought, oh, what the heck? I could not believe it. Within minutes, I was without a migraine. It had stopped. And I thought, well, maybe it's a coincidence.
Yeah.
So I tried it again. And I immediately knew I was going to buy this, even though I couldn't afford it. But I, for the first time in my life, I put it on a large, something that cost a lot, on my credit card. I've never done that before, but I don't regret it.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what are you doing now that you feel better, like in terms of work? Are you back to being an artist? Are you still doing your therapy? No,
right now, I'm marketing the book as a full-time job.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I can't recommend it more highly. I Chose Love by Sandy Gold, Sandy with an I. You can find it on Amazon. It comes right up. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I do want to say on Amazon that they've made it very difficult to find my book. If you just put in I Chose Love, it'll default to I Choose Love.
Right.
So I would suggest putting I Chose Love by Sandy Gold. You have to put my name in there as well.
Yes.
Or you have to click something in very tiny little print to put it back to I Chose Love. They've made it very complicated. It's better to go to sandygold.com, my own.
Okay. Okay, sandygold.com. But if you do go to Amazon, put Sandy Gold first, and then it came up for me. But yeah. So yeah. Please help support Sandy. She really has an amazing message. And we're not done yet, but I just want to make sure that people get that. Especially, I mean, okay, so I know you said this is not a one size fits all, but if somebody else had a diagnosis like you did, or a cancer, you know, they will read about how you beat cancer without going the doctor's roots, which is, again, is incredible. What would you recommend for them to do besides buy your book?
Our bodies have this innate intelligence to them, much smarter than our minds, and yet we're always looking to our minds for answers. I would say start today to get very sensitive to what's going on in your body. We were given all emotions, even the icky ones like grief, frustration, anger, but we were given all of them for a reason. And so stop and feel them. Don't avoid them. Stop and feel everything you feel, and it'll pass right through you. And it actually eventually always turns to love.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest, starting that today. And also to live in the present. Have you noticed that most of all of our problems are either we're worried about something in the future or something that's happened in the past? Live in the present, and you'll find you're fine.
Wow. It's true. When I start worrying, I'm like, okay, nothing is actually happening right now. I'm just sitting here talking to Sandy, but my mind's going, boo, right? How are you going to end this? How much time, you know? But if I just look at you, I find that peace again.
We create those problems, so many problems in our head.
Yeah.
All the time. And I realized I couldn't afford to do that. You know, when I was sick, I was putting more stress on my body. So that's how I learned that.
Wow. Well, I totally recommend your book. What would you, like, what difference do you want to make? Like, let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, how do you want to see things? What's your vision? What's your mission?
I really would love for people to understand that they have options. And I'm not saying don't listen to your doctors, because there's some wonderful doctors out there. I listen to my doctors, but I take it in. I feel in my body, is this what my body really wants me to do? And to recognize that each of us has power. We all have a power within us. And to not constantly look outside of ourselves for answers. And that's another reason why don't direct yourself in that direction. The power is within us.
Wow. And how would you best recommend accessing that power?
By feeling your feelings.
Really?
Every day. And it really helps to meditate too, because that helps to regulate our nervous systems. So they, you know, we don't get hijacked by our feelings.
So, okay. Feel your feelings. I think a lot of us, and I'll speak for me, were told, you know, as a child, don't be upset. So I got very good at not being upset. I was fine. I don't know what you're talking about, you know, and I really thought I was fine. So feeling my feelings is not always, I don't even know I have feelings, you know, until like, it's almost like under a layer of
yes,
that yeah. I got good at putting the layer of crap there. And I think a lot of people have. How would you say, if for a beginner who hasn't learned that, to go to start feeling your feelings? Like, how do you know you even have a feeling that you're not feeling, if you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think the easiest way is to start with your good feelings, because everybody gravitates towards their good feelings. You know, really stop and appreciate the sunset. Really stop and appreciate your dog. You know, just appreciate, feel, take it in. Take in as much love as you can every single day. And once you have that foundation, when you're angry, and I'm not saying you need to lash out, you need to react on your anger, but feel it. Just exit the room. Just say, you know, I need time for myself, and just sit down and be with your anger. Just feel it. Just, you don't have to even try analyze it. You just need to feel it, and it'll go right through your body, and it won't last as long. Once you allow yourself to feel it, it won't be as powerful. You won't be fighting against it. It won't hijack you if you allow yourself to just feel it.
Wow. I remember doing an exercise where we did, I don't know how it worked, but we, you know, first we felt anger and then we felt whatever. And it was like a couple of seconds versus resisting it could be years, 40 years of resisting anger, you know?
And creating suffering for ourselves.
Yeah.
For years. That's how we've all been brought up. Many of us have been brought up. And wow. I'm saying no.
Yeah, allow it. So it's okay to feel anger. Mm-hmm. And you don't even have to act it out. You just feel it.
No. Yeah. And the more you feel it, the less you want to act it out.
Wow.
Because as I said, it really, everything does melt into love. I mean, as you're sitting there and the anger goes through your body, you'll feel such appreciation for yourself for having sat down and done that. That's how I feel.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Sandy.
You're
this
very
has been
welcome.
So fabulous. It's beyond admiring. It's, I'm in awe of what you've done, what you've come through, your courage, your demonstration of love, just, you know, what you can teach for the world. And I hope that every single person on the planet reads your book and chooses love. No, really, it could change the planet. So thank you so much for that. Is there anything you want to say in closing?
I just want to thank you, because we need people like you, I'll speak for myself. I need people like you to get the word out. You know, to help me, I can write a book all I want, but I need people to spread the word like you are doing. And I appreciate that.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. So thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.